Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, and at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information at countrycrop.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fourth day of February 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll take a look at the cash grain market, too. Then with Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting from Windsor, Illinois. Along the way, I'll take you on my visit earlier today to Blue Waters. That's the NCSA, National Center for Supercomputing Applications Supercomputer, that's based right here on campus, and you won't believe how much work they're doing for farmers and agriculture. And then, as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers from Chicago for a Thursday afternoon. March corn down 2.5 at $3.68.5. The May at 373.5, 2.5 lower. July down 2.5 at 378.75. And December corn at $3.91.25, down a penny and 3/4. Soy complex, March beans 2.25 lower, $8.74.5. The final trade. May down 2.25 at 877.5. And July at 883.75, down 2.5 cents. Next year's November beans 0.75 cents lower at $8.88.25. Bean meal futures off 250 at 267.60. The bean oil at 31.24. Up 26 cents. Soft red winter wheat down 7.25 in the lead option March at $4.72.75. The July at $4.81.75 down 6.5 cents. And the hard red July at $4.79.75 down 8.75 cents. Live cattle futures currently trading up 25 cents in the lead option Febs at $137.10. The last trade in the April at $135.65, to a dime lower. Feeder cattle are down $1.50 at $156.45. The April at $155.95, down $1.35. And lean hogs for the day trading the February contract at $65.12.5 per 100 pounds, up 57.5 cents. April also up 57.5 at $70.25. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Still working on registration, though I think I've almost got it worked out so that you can get registered for the All Day Ag Outlook, but not just yet. Keep track of us. We'll be there shortly. You can find it at willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. The outside markets at this hour are trading the ethanol futures at $1.41.3. They're up 0.4 cents. Crude oil is at $31.74 a barrel. That's down 54 cents. The price of gasoline on wholesale, a gallon at $1.02.7, a penny and 0.3 cents higher, and diesel fuel at $1.08.1. That's up 0.2 cents. Natural gas at $1.97.5. That's down 6.4 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 16,299 is up about 36 points. The U.S. dollar at 96.485. That's down 0.816. And the gold futures on the afternoon are trading at $1,158 even. They're up $16.75. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly sunny, a high of 34. Southwest winds at around 7 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 23. Southwest winds at about 7. And Friday, mostly sunny, a high near 37. West-northwest winds at 3 to 7. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 26 degrees. It'll be calm on Friday evening with a 5 to 7 mile an hour wind. And then on Saturday, partly sunny, a high of 44 degrees. West winds at 6 to 11. They'll gust to 15. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 29. Southwest winds at 5 to 7. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Once we get to the bottom of the hour, you'll want to stay with us all the way through that right here on willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
This is Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On this fourth day of February, we're joined by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a quick look at the marketplace. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with me this afternoon.
More than welcome, Todd.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the marketplace and what you think will be happening. It was, what I'd call a quiet day, though after being up, I was a little surprised that beans didn't manage to hold on to their gains for the day, finishing down about 2.25 cents. Is this any kind of worry or just a natural ebb and flow of the marketplace?
Well, depending upon which technical indicator you look at, there's probably reason to think that the market is, especially corn, probably more in an overbought status than soybeans, but soybeans too are at a point where they could kind of turn sideways or have a little downward pressure on it. Corn kind of looks to me like it may be more vulnerable to some downward pressure because we've had a pretty good run in corn when you look at the chart for the past 3 weeks or so. So there's probably room for some kind of corrective measure consolidation. And when you combine that, when you're looking at some of the technical indicators. Now, corn has had a hard time. They're all kind of clustered in with this moving averages. Soybeans are too, some of these key moving averages. But it doesn't seem like they're able to kind of pull away from them. If anything, the moving averages at the moment are offering resistance. And I think a lot of that is probably because there's just not a lot of fresh demand news to talk about or supply shortness in the marketplace. So it just seems like we're in more of a trading range market. We might be, in corn's case, up toward the upper end of the trading range before we have a setback in here over the next few days. But, you know, like last week when I talked to you, the market just, you know, it looked real good in the morning, and then by the close it looked terrible. And then Friday it was able to reverse it south and close out the week strong, close out the month higher. So when you look at some of the bigger picture, the monthly reversal in corn does kind of keep the market in play for a rally, but the month of February here, we could very easily, you know, just kind of consolidate and not do much, I think, until we get into probably March contract expiration. The thing that probably worries me the most is farmers are pretty well loaded up on basis contracts, and that could at some point in time come to market and put some downward pressure in March futures as we go into the expiration period.
So therein lies the biggest problem that producers will be faced with in the next month or so.
I think so, because what's going to happen is the basis contracts are going to roll. They're going to roll to so many cents underneath the May contract as the March contract goes off the board. And so the premium basis that they started out with is going to probably get eaten up by carrying charges that just kind of disappear as the market kind of tracks sideways here, at least through the winter months here until we kind of get into the growing season. And then you begin to juice up volatility once you get into the planting season and growing season. But I think between now and March, unless something happens out of South America, it doesn't look like it's going to be too exciting of a market.
Yeah, it looks like we'll be waiting for March and the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's when the incitement almost always happens, I suppose. And I guess we'll be looking for that. And the good news is you'll be here with us too, right?
And yes, excellent. I'll be up.
I love it.
Well, I got to come back and see a little snow. I don't know if we'll have snow there, but usually the Ag Outlook has some bad weather usually.
Well, so we'll see. Sometimes good weather, sometimes bad. I hope for good weather most of the time, but farmers come one way or the other.
Yeah, since we've got an early Easter, we ought to be looking for an early spring. It kind of feels that down south here. The farmers are going to have some corn in the ground here by middle part of February,
Did you happen to see my Twitter account yesterday? I had a farmer from Corpus Christi way down south. He's in the field planting corn.
Yeah, that's when you get below 10, you get in the Rio Grande Valley, they're planting, and that's going to move on up into central Texas fairly quick. They were in the fields the last few days, so I think you're going to see some stuff planted at least around the Waco area around the 15th or 20th of February anyway.
Well, we'll check with you again next week. Hey, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He is out of Waco, Texas. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Just a quick reminder, he will be here for the all-day Ag Outlook. However, our ticket sales haven't started yet. Still working on some back-end functions there. I think we'll get it fixed by the end of today, but be patient. We'll get it done. Earlier today, I told you I was headed out to the supercomputer that's called Blue Waters, located on the southwest corner of campus near the State Farm Center, the Assembly Hall, and Memorial Stadium, the football stadium. And in fact, I did make that trip around 11 o'clock this morning to meet up with their Director of Economic and Societal Impact, Scott Wilkin. Scott took me on a tour of this fantastical building that houses one of the biggest and most powerful computers on the planet. I asked him a bit about the computer and what purpose it serves on this campus.
So Blue Waters is funded by the federal government. It's a National Science Foundation computer. It costs approximately $250 million. It has over 300,000 cores and almost a million GPUs. It is one of the fastest and most memory computers in the planet, and it does things that we in the society of high performance computing think of day to day, but we've got scientists working on things from HIV virus all the way to tornadoes and weather to seismic work to figuring out how to cut a differential better. I mean, it really is all about how can we take the compute power to change the way we look at things around the planet. That's really what it's all about.
To that end, we're in the middle of the Midwest. We're not in Silicon Valley. And we're in a really agricultural-heavy industry area. You work with many companies that need to use Blue Waters to help them decide big problems related to big data. Mm-hmm. Companies like Agrible, which we have on our air on Friday afternoons, at least a representative of, who's talking about weather. But they're doing big data functions. Mm-hmm. Other companies as well.
We have 30 companies that are part of our industrial program here at NCSA. We're very proud of that. We've been here for 30 years, and we have companies like Caterpillar who have been part of that industrial program for all 30 years. So they've been with us working on different types of visualizations and different just ways to use the supercomputer for that long. They've really been a leading company in doing that. We have other companies, as you can go to the website and see them all, but they go from oil companies to manufacturers to agriculture.
Yeah, I can recall going to Beckman years ago, maybe nearly two decades ago, into the virtualization cave at the time, and one of the users was Caterpillar. They were trying to design a better cab mm-hmm. for their operators, and I suppose they did that over time, but it was about the ability to just visualize virtually what new cabs were like.
That was a huge project for NCSA, and it got so big and so important for Caterpillar that they actually had to kind of move it out of Beckman at that point, I believe. Now, it's before my time, but out of Beckman over to the research park. And they still do a lot of visualization work here in the research park. So they were one of the first folks in the research park, too.
How important is this, and I'll call it a lab, in the grand scheme of things?
So for the National Science Foundation, this is their Tier 1 supercomputer. They have many littler supercomputers all over the nation, but there are a handful of supercomputer centers from San Diego, Texas, Illinois, Pittsburgh. But this is their tier one machine. This is where they put their big money to make big science happen. That's basically how important it is. So it's their number one. It's their fourth batter. It's their cleanup hitter.
So, and what strikes me is that it's not essentially all about just the back-end research. There's real application research that happens at NCSA and Blue Waters now.
Oh, absolutely. So NCSA actually stands for National Center for Supercomputing Applications. And applications is by far probably one of the most important things we do, because if you don't have folks working on how to make a better memory usage tool, or how do you actually build a way for the data to move from point A to point B, those are applications that are needed all the time. You know, as history goes, NCSA also was the place that Mosaic was first built, so the browser. So Mosaic was kind of the first graphical browser that was actually ever built, and it was moved out into Netscape and Microsoft and all those companies. Billions of dollars worth of our new economy kind of started here. So the future really started here. We had NCSA Telnet, the Apache web server. All those things have been built over time in the application space that was around NCSA. So there's a very rich history of why we're here.
And one final note, Scott, is that you live and work here in Champaign County, but you also live and work on a working farm with your brother and your father. And some of the application work, not because you're connected directly to NCSA, but some of the application work that happens on the farm, the big data kinds of functions that producers are grappling with at this point. You, United Prairie, which is the elevator operator that services your area, one of them anyway, work pretty closely to try to figure out how that data coming off of your farm, the maps that are generated, all of the data can be incorporated into applications to make the farm better?
Well, so to be clear, I'm fifth string on the farm team. I'm not the main farmers. My brother and dad are, but I am very interested in the data and things that come off. We use, on our farm, we use the John Deere platform, Apex. But my dad has been taking data since the early 70s, and he was doing it on pencil and paper and taking soil tests. So we have actually data way back, and at that point it was considered big data. So we have always been concerned how to use that data to make better decisions on have better fertility, better hybrid selection, basically hydrology for the field. When we look at the field, how do we actually decide where we want to put tile? Those are the things that we've used our data and yield data and things like that to actually kind of help us change decisions on where we spend our money and make better decisions for the farm. So it's not that it's overnight changed how we run our farm. It's been integrated into the farm. The data has been integrated into the farm over the past 20 years.
And your insight from NCSA tells you that's just going to get greater?
Oh, it has to. It really does. You've got companies like Agribol Granular. There's ADM is looking at how to use for crop insurance. We've got great guys on campus like Bruce Sherrick and Peter Christensen that are pushing the edge of economics. Could we literally, if you think about it, is there an opportunity in the future to make better decisions knowing our weather data as we start our, you know, farmers are always long in the market, right? If we understood our weather data out a lot farther through the models that are generated off of big data and being able to understand our atmospherics better, could we make better hedging decisions for the farm going forward? I hope so. I mean, could we change the paradigm of how brokers are seeing the market? I think so. Those are the things I think that could happen in the future. I think we're maybe 5-10 years from there, being able to really see that change, but I think it's going to change.
Scott, thank you so much for just an intriguing tour of Blue Waters here today.
It's my pleasure. Yeah, you're always welcome.
Scott Wilkin is the Director of Economic and Societal Impact for NCSA, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications. It was really nice of him to take me on a tour of Blue Waters. I'll post some photos, maybe a little video, to our website at willag.org when I get a chance, so you can see the inside of this building, too. Time to check the cash grain market. Matt Bennett is with us. He's with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, though he travels a lot for the winter meeting season. Where are you today, Matt? Thanks for being with us, by the way.
Well, I'm working my way towards Troy, Missouri. Been in Missouri last day or so. Done a couple, three meetings, talking mostly to channel customers about, risk management, marketing your crop, old crop and new, and the challenges that we're facing there, and just some ideas on ways to do that.
What questions have they been talking to you mostly about, and what are the things they're interested in?
Well, you know, it's no secret that there's still a lot of guys holding on to cash corn. You know, how can we get money in our pocket and participate in a upward move, which, you know, we've talked about that since fall, about, you know, you could buy a call option strategy if you want, maybe a bull call spread to cheapen it up. And then they've also, of course, been asking, is 16 going to be any better than 15? Because most guys are not overly thrilled about their income for 15. So, you know, we've been talking quite a bit about the way that we see the year playing out. I do think that this February crop insurance price setting month is going to probably dictate acreage to an extent. Course will be weather dependent.
What do you tell them about the 15 versus 16 on their income? Just say no? or do you have
I mean, that's a tough discussion because, you know, a 200 APH with insurance price, if it was where we're looking at today, we're about 25 cents under last year. You know, if we're in that situation on 200 APH, it's $40 an acre on 85%, 40 to 45, depending on who what their APH is. And so, you know, we've got to understand that our costs haven't come down that much. So, obviously, the situation's tighter than what it was in 15 going in. And by all means, it could be another tough year, depending on whether we have any excitement in the market this year.
It means they're going to have to pay more attention to the risk management side of this marketplace for sure then.
Absolutely.
And what do you suggest?
Well, I think there's a couple of things a guy can do. For instance, whether you're looking at these corn or nove beans, in recent past, you've been able to sell a 980 nove bean call for 20 cents, which is basically telling the market, hey, I'm okay with $10 basis support on the one side. And on the other side, if we don't rally, I'm going to get to put 20 cents in my pocket to add on to my cash price next fall. It may be small change, but it's better than nothing. Similarly, selling a 440 call, we've sold a lot of 440 calls in the last few weeks for 18 to 20 cents. It's the same premise. You know, I'm okay with 460 corn basis support if it rallies.
Hey, thanks so much. That, of course, is Matt Bennett back in 2 minutes.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Stuffed Mushroom Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, John Bachman was born, a naturalist and Lutheran minister. He wrote some of the text for John James Audubon's albums of birds and mammals of North America. He also published his own works on botany, agriculture, and southern animals. In 1810, Alexis Soyer was born, a French chef and author. He opened kitchens in Ireland during the famine to sell food at one-half price, and he was also the inventor of several stoves and kitchen utensils. In 1824, J.W. Goodrich introduced rubber galoshes, thin rubber boots to fit over shoes during inclement weather. In 1906, Clyde W. Tombaugh was born, an American astronomer. He discovered Pluto in 1930. Born on a farm near Streator, Illinois, his first telescope was made from old farm equipment parts. In 1930, candy maker Frank C. Mars of Minnesota introduced the Snickers bar. And in 1941, Roy J. Plunkett received the U.S. patent for Teflon. He discovered it by accident in 1938. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media this Thursday afternoon. It's the fourth day of February. We're joined by Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm in Chicago. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. Let's start in South America and discuss crop conditions there. We're getting later in their season. How are things in Brazil and Argentina?
Well, for the moment in Brazil, they're improving for soybean harvesting in the northern areas, as well as for second crop corn planting. Recall that once you harvest your soybeans in northern Brazil, you follow that up with second crop corn. At least that's what a lot of producers there do. So we do have a bit of a drier pattern taking place for the next 10 days or so, and that should allow both of those activities to improve with time. Once we get into next weekend, the upper level high that's responsible for some of that drying moves away, and that should allow cool fronts to move further to the north. Those cool fronts will help more thunderstorms to form once we get into next weekend and then leading into the last week of February. So that could slow things down a little bit. That might be something to watch going forward. But for the time being, it's pretty quiet on the Brazil front, and it will probably stay that way for some time. We need to have either this dry period last longer than expected or the wet period coming up toward the end of the month to really delay planting and harvesting in order to get too excited about any Brazil issues, or at least any new Brazil issues going forward. To the south in Argentina, some of these areas have been a little bit dry, especially from eastern Buenos Aires through Entre Rios. We would estimate that around 15% of corn and soybean production in Argentina is considerably drier than it should be, considering that not much rain has fallen since about January 1st. Much of that region received half of its normal rainfall or less. Going forward, thunderstorm chances do improve. We look for a couple of storm systems to move across that region starting tomorrow, and more so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That should develop 1 to 2 inches of rain region-wide across Argentina. That will be helpful for those drier areas, but do keep in mind that a portion of Cordoba, which is one of the key producing states of Argentina, has been very wet with around 12 inches of rain since January 1st. Normal rainfall would have been around 4 inches. It's isolated to the southern parts of that state, but they also receive significant rainfall. So while some areas will clearly benefit from upcoming rain, some areas will stay a little bit too wet. Again, this is minor stuff at this point. We'll just have to watch it and see what happens going forward.
Speaking of minor things, the Southern Plains seem to have been dry for a bit. Any concerns we have there?
Well, not at the moment, but the big blizzard that hit Nebraska and northern Kansas on Monday and Tuesday generally missed all the hard red winter wheat from southern Kansas and points on to the south. That region has been fairly dry over the last 30 to 40 days, and we don't look for much or any real rain or snow over the next 10 days. So now we're starting to get into a fairly long period of time without a lot of rain or snow. Whether or not that lasts will become a more important issue with time. But of course, as always, we'll be keeping an eye on it and really watching it more toward the latter part of March and into April.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Mike Tenora with T-Storm Weather. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.